From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 27th day of December, 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. We'll hear what Daryl Good, ag economist at the U of I, thinks the brand new cash price era might look like for corn and soybeans. The averages may be lower than you expect. And we'll hear from him about the National Agricultural Statistics Service reports, some myths and misunderstandings. As we close out our program today, Don Day of Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming, will be here to help us look at the agricultural weather forecast on a Tuesday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/FarmerView.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon. Hear the way the settlement prices came in from Chicago for the day. Nearby contracting, the soft red winter wheat finished the March at 644 and three quarters, up 22 and three quarters. May at 662, 22 and a half higher. And July at 676, up 20 and a half cents. The hard red in Kansas City, July contract 21 cents higher at $7.12 and a quarter. March corn futures 633 and a quarter, up 13 and three quarters. May 641 and a quarter, 13 and a quarter higher. July corn at 647 and a quarter, up 13 and a quarter. September futures at $6 a penny and a quarter, up 8 and a quarter. And December contract, the new crop at $5.77 and a quarter in the corn pit, 8 and a quarter cents higher from Chicago. March at $5.89, up 7 and 3 quarters. Soy complex now. January beans, 36 and 3 quarters cents higher, $11.99 and 3 quarters the settlement price. March at $12.09 and a half cents, up 37. May at $12.19 and a quarter, 37 cents higher. July soybeans, $12.28 and a half, up 36 and a half. The November at $12.14, rather $12.06, up 27 cents. Bean meal futures January contract at $307.70, up $10.70. Bean oil at $51.84, 88 cents higher. Live cattle futures finished the nearby contract in the December at $123.25, a dollar and a nickel lower. February at $123.20, down $1.12.5. That's the live cattle. Feeders at $147.15 for the Jans, 47.5 cents lower. The March at $150.27.5, down 17.5 cents. And the February lean hogs at $85.75 finished a dime lower. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, a February contract, $101.23 a barrel, up $1.56. Ethanol at $2.22 and 3 cents, that's 3 8 cents of a cent higher. Natural gas at $3.12 and 7 cents of a cent, a penny and 3 cents higher. Diesel fuel or heating oil, $2.90 and a half cents, up a penny and 4 cents. And gold futures on the day, down $10.50 at $1,594.20 a troy ounce. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up just about 25 points at 12,318. The dollar at 79.8 is down 0.13. The CRB index at 308.27 up 2.1 for the afternoon. The weather forecast says this afternoon we'll see a chance of sprinkles and flurries here in the Urbana-Champaign area, yet cloudy, a high of 36 degrees with a breezy wind out of the northwest at 22 miles an hour, gusting all the way to 30. And then tonight, partly cloudy skies, a low of 21, blustery, a low again of 21 degrees this evening. Northwest wind at 17 to 20, that'll decrease to 6 to 19. Tomorrow, mostly sunny skies, a high of 37 degrees, a west-northwest wind at 6 to 8, and Wednesday night, partly cloudy, a low of 27. Thursday, partly sunny, a high of 45, with a west-southwest wind at 9 to 15, and Thursday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 35. Partly sunny on Friday, the high of 46. Friday night, cloudy, 34. Saturday, mostly sunny, a high of 49. Saturday night, partly cloudy, and a low of 36 degrees. On New Year's Day, mostly sunny skies. That's Sunday, with a high of 46 degrees. Sunday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 27. And on Monday, partly sunny, a high near 36 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Don Day at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Support comes from Murray Wise Associates, a nationwide agricultural advisory firm and land auction company specializing in the acquisition, management, and disposition of farmland and agribusiness investments. Land, auctions, agribusiness. More information is at murraywiseassociates.com.
It's Tuesday afternoon. Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report to look at the futures markets. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Quite good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, quite the day in Chicago, the first trading day after the holiday, and they came out buying this morning, and they just continued to buy throughout the day. Did it start in the overnight trade?
Well, of course, there was a new overnight
trade. Oh, that's
right.
I wasn't thinking about that. It started this morning, so start with
it
the export inspections.
This morning, actually, the calls were for a lot lower than what we ended up trading here. So enthusiasm built just shortly into the open. The weather forecasts seem to be the only thing we were talking about today is people sort of forgot about Europe since the IMF fund come in and loaned the European banks money here cheaply for a three-year time period. And we're centering on this South American weather for right now, and it, of course, is warm and dry. Some chance of rain out in the 14 to 16-day time period, but that's a long ways out.
And for Argentina, for the corn crop, I suppose, for the soybean crop, they're right in the midst of the growing season, so it's at that time frame when it makes a difference.
Yeah, there's a fair amount of corn that's going to be in pollination over the next 2 weeks, and some of the earlier planted beans will be a little bit stressed here during this time period. It was backed up or made somewhat official when Dr. Michael Cordonnier lowered all of his predictions here over the weekend, and that basically led substantially to everybody feeling that it was not just a weather scare, that there was really something to it.
Yeah, speaking of things that were supportive to the marketplace on the corn side, the export inspections were pretty good this morning.
They were quite good. Generally over the Christmas holiday week here, we don't see loadings quite that good, and they were on the high end of everything, everybody's expectations, so that also pumped in there quite well. Todd, I mean, it's one of those things. You know, we had some pretty good trade volume for the holidays here today, but yet, the numbers that the funds bought today weren't near as big as you would think for the month we moved this market. But nobody really wants to sell this in a thin market, especially with weather forecasts not really changing.
Right. So tell me about the holiday trade and when it's a little soft in the number of contracts that are available. Does that mean that this is a good move higher, or does it mean that it has less underneath it than you might expect?
Well, I think that it moves higher easier because we're seeing a lack of sellers. There's not an aggressive market. Not as many people are trading this week just because of the taking off between the holidays. But the volume that we did see traded at the Board of Trade today wasn't bad for a holiday week.
Iran not doing saber rattling. I'll have to get that out yet. But they are talking just a bit about if sanctions are put forth on them economically, that they would just turn the spigot off. That moved crude oil a bit higher for the day.
Yeah, that and along with the ideas that they were doing some naval exercises over there, too, basically along that. That always makes everybody a little bit uneasy and along the way. So, it's just, and then, of course, Al-Qaeda taking credit for some of the bombings that happened in Iraq over the weekend. Mm-hmm. All those things, a little bit uneasy for that area of the world.
Take a look out for the next several days as we close out the trading year on this last trading day of the year on Friday of this week. What do you think will happen between then and now? Anything interesting?
Well, I think, number one, we're going to be looking ahead to the report on January 12th. I think that there's been somewhat of an inference that there's certain individuals and powerful places that are thinking that the government might cut back a little on the production numbers at the USDA for that report. That's one positive thing. If the weather forecast holds here and it stays dry and we see people continuing to cut the yield down south, we're going to be hard-pressed to find a lot of selling. I think we're going to get up to a level, and I'm not sure where that level is going to be, but as we get on a little higher here, things will slow down a little bit until we get a little farther down the line in the weather picture and see how much the yields are cut, Todd. But all in all, it looks like a positive start to the final week of the year in the markets.
Wayne, thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana, and joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon. That happens each and every Tuesday. If you'd like to hear Wayne again, you can always do that online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There we post all of our agricultural programming from our pre-opening market report to the closing market report and everything in between each and every business day. And Commodity Week, it's our weekly look at what's been happening in the world of agriculture. One other place I'd like you to visit right now, if you get the opportunity and you're online, is CropSci Conferences. That's CropSci, CROPSCI Conferences, all one word, .com. And there you'll find the Corn and Soybean Classic Agenda for the month of January. I'll be on the road for a couple of weeks with the crop scientist, taking a look at what's been happening in Illinois fields. And we'll be making trips and stops across the state of Illinois. You can sign up and pre-register for that event right now. It's $75. You can always walk in, too. You can find all the information at CropSciConferences.com right there at the University of Illinois website for the Corn and Soybean Classic Series.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In today's agricultural news, 17 U.S. senators have written the Attorney General urging him to bring justice to the actions of MF Global executives for the potentially illegal misappropriation of funds from the segregated accounts of its commodity customers. In the letter, the senator said if the Justice Department's ongoing investigations uncover illegal actions, criminal prosecution should be pursued without hesitation. We urge federal agents to use every legal resource available, in the written letter, according to the senators. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley has participated in oversight hearings of the Senate Committee on Agriculture seeking information and accountability for the loss of up to $1.2 billion in customer funds, including money from farmers, grain co-ops, and brokers. Mr. Grassley notes establishing the specifics of what happened is key to figuring out how the system failed and how to fix it going forward. That's in addition to the immediate task of helping to minimize the damage for farmers and other investors caught in the MF Global debacle. Well, researchers at the U.S. Department of Energy's Joint Bioenergy Institute have announced a major breakthrough in engineering systems of RNA molecules through computer-assisted design, which could lead to important improvements across a range of industries, including the development of cheaper advanced biofuels. Scientists will use these new RNA machines to adjust genetic expression in the cells of microorganisms. This will enable scientists to develop new strains of E. coli that are better able to digest switchgrass biomass, for instance, and convert released sugars to form three types of transportation fuels: gasoline, diesel, and jet fuels. A breakthrough with E. coli could make it cheaper to produce fuel from switchgrass or other non-food biomass plants to create advanced biofuels with the potential to replace gasoline. And while the work at JBEI remains focused on the development of advanced biofuels, JBEI's researchers believe their concepts may help other researchers to develop many other desired products, including biodegradable plastics and therapeutic drugs. And finally today, the idea of honoring our nation's war dead by laying wreaths on the graves at Arlington National Cemetery was started by an agribusinessman. Tracy Taylor Grondine puts this story into perspective.
They say the charity starts at home, and for nearly 15,000 people in the Washington, D.C. area, that sentiment was wholeheartedly felt earlier this December as they laid wreaths on graves in Arlington Cemetery, from those in the older section of Arlington Cemetery to those that are just a few months old. In the true meaning of Christmas, people from all walks of life join together to honor nearly 100,000 of America's fallen heroes. The effort, known as Wreaths Across America, was started by Farm Bureau member Morrill Worcester in 1992. Worcester, who owns a wreath company in Harrington, Maine, had extra wreaths at the close of that holiday season and wanted to put them to good use. His idea? To honor America's soldiers buried at Arlington Cemetery. And, as good deeds are contagious, once word got around about Worcester's goal, others from the community joined in to make it a reality. A local trucking company stepped in to transport the wreaths. Volunteers gathered to decorate them with red ribbon. And even more people joined forces to place them on older graves that were becoming less and less visited. That was nearly 20 years ago. Today, through the nonprofit 501c3 that Worcester formed in 2007, national and state cemeteries also receive Worcester's wreaths, nearly 600 locations in the U.S. and beyond. It's people like Maura Worcester who gave something that was so much more than just surplus wreaths who represent the true spirit of Christmas, that of giving, remembering, and honoring. It just happens that sometimes the holiday spirit is made even more special when it's wrapped in balsam and tied with red ribbon.
That's Tracy Taylor Grodine of the American Farm Bureau Federation. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Support comes from Murray Wise Associates, a nationwide agricultural advisory firm and land auction company specializing in the acquisition, management, and disposition of farmland and agribusiness investments. Land, auctions, agribusiness. More information is at murraywiseassociates.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Please do visit us online at willag.org. Now up next, 2011 was a year for record crop prices. However, one expert believes a correction could be in store for 2012. Well, the University of Illinois College of ACES recently held a series of farm economic summits across the state to give producers and agribusiness people an outlook for the 2012 year. Daryl Good, ag economist, believes the record prices of 2011 are behind us and both corn and soybean prices are due to return closer to their long-term averages.
Basically, what we're seeing is some concern about a general economic weakness in the U.S. and the rest of the world, and some financial problems, obviously, in Europe, perhaps providing a weaker overview for the demand side of the crop markets next year. On the supply side, talking about the potential for a return to a more normal crop next year, which would be a fairly large increase from what we had in 2011 for both corn and soybeans. That combination perhaps pointing to lower prices for the year ahead, certainly than what we've experienced here in 2011.
So what are those long-term averages for corn and soybeans? Good explains a team at the U of I has conducted an in-depth study of commodity prices and came up with some interesting findings.
We know that we've been at relatively high prices in 2011, and the message is, I think, that don't expect those to be normal or average prices moving forward. We looked at the history going back a number of years and saying, you know, in the 1970s, we took a leg up in commodity prices. It looks like we've taken another leg up. So in this new era, what would we expect an average price to be? And for corn and soybeans, that's considerably lower than what we've been experiencing this past year. And if you're thinking long-term $4.50 corn, $10.50 beans, that's a more reasonable price to use in investment decisions, planning decisions, rather than the current $6 and $12 price levels.
Those interested in finding out more about the presentation can view it at the FarmDoc website. That's farmdoc.illinois.edu. Well, it's pretty likely that you already know the U.S. is the world's largest producer and exporter of corn and soybeans. As a result, of course, the size of the crops right here in the United States has a substantial impact on price. And during the planting and growing season, market participants form expectations about the potential size of these crops from a variety of private and public sources of information, including NASS. In a moment, we'll hear about some of the myths and misunderstandings of how the National Agricultural Statistics Service of the U.S. Department of Agriculture gathers this information.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
USDA reports seem to be grossly misunderstood, thanks to University of Illinois ag economist Daryl Good. It and NAS, the National Agricultural Statistics Service, get a bad rap for no particularly good reason when the numbers for the prospective plantings, the crop production, and the June acreage reports are released. This, says Daryl Good, is because most people have not taken the time to read the methods behind the numbers.
And it appeared to us a lot of people didn't understand how they do that, even though they've documented in detail their methodology. People don't tend to read that. And secondly, some people believe that USDA has a kind of a hidden agenda or a motive for the numbers that they actually publish. So our idea was to review their methodology and then try to present that in a brief layman's terms so that users of the data could have a better understanding of how the numbers are put together.
Well, the summer numbers are most problematic, says Daryl Good, because most people don't understand two statistical methods are used to gather up the information.
One, where they actually survey producers directly and ask them their acreage intentions or actual plantings, in the case of the June report. And then for the monthly yield estimates, they survey farmers and ask them directly, what do you expect your average yield to be this year? But also for those final two reports, the June acreage and the yield estimates, USDA actually has what they call an area frame sample, where they determine before the season starts specific segments of agricultural land throughout the major producing states. And they actually go to those segments each month during the forecast cycle and take measurements of crops that are there and use that data to forecast yield and acreage as well.
It is the combination of those two survey methods that make up each report estimate for the June acreage survey and the monthly crop production reports.
Prospective plantings report does not involve an area frame sample. That is what they call a list frame survey, where they just send questionnaires to farmers directly. There is no field observation on that because it is intentions. There's really nothing to look at that point when the data is collected for the March prospective plantings report.
USDA surveys more than 80,000 producers to gather information on what they expect their crop mix by acre will be for each season. Here's one of the big myths about the USDA numbers. The reports are rigged to meet governmental goals. It is simply not possible, says Daryl Good.
Absolutely not. I think what you would see looking at their methodology is it's a very statistically sound methodology, very objective methodology. And you know, even if there was some agenda to shade the numbers one way or another, at the end of the day, that bias or that motivation would be uncovered.
The USDA surveys are objective, and because two types of sampling are done during the growing season, those numbers benefit from a composite data estimate. That means the two surveys are done simultaneously to get at the same number. What shortcomings there are in the yield forecast, says Daryl Good, are inherent to the season and really cannot be overcome. He says the relationship between early season estimates and the lack of hard data points, number of corn ears per acre and soybean pods per plant, is not constant as it relates to yield. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. We'll say goodbye now to some of our radio stations. For the rest of you, stay with us. I'll be back in just a moment when we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
It's National Fruitcake Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1741, Jean Bourne was born, the inventor of the sugar granulating process. He also was founder of the sugar industry in Louisiana. In 1822, Louis Pasteur was born, a French scientist. PPE showed that microorganisms were responsible for disease, food spoilage, and fermentation. He developed the process for killing those organisms by heat, called pasteurization. He also developed vaccines for anthrax and rabies. In 1867, William Cecil Dampier was born, a British scientist, agriculturalist, and science historian. He developed a method of extracting lactose from surplus whey, a process that was used on a commercial scale during the cheese shortage in Britain during World War I. He also conducted experiments for more efficient means of production on farmland. In 1931, Dampier was knighted for his public service in agriculture. In 1923, Michael Owens died, an American glass manufacturer. He invented the automatic glass bottling making machine that revolutionized the industry. And in 1968, Victor Shelford died, an American zoologist and ecologist. He was one of the first to treat ecology as a separate science. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to the closing market report. It is a Tuesday afternoon, Don Day of Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming is here to take up the agricultural weather forecast to our part of the world. It came a little bit late for Christmas, but I awakened to a white Christmas and a bit of snow this morning, though I suspect it will disappear pretty quickly as we make our way through the week. What can you tell me about the forecast for the locality here in Urbana-Champaign?
Well, it's going to be, as you just mentioned, after the system came through bringing us a little bit of snow, we'll see a chilly night and a cool day tomorrow. But then after that, it's going to be a few days before we see the next system move in. Next system will be moving across the Midwest, especially the northern portions of the Midwest and Great Lakes, Saturday night and Sunday. That'll be the next opportunity for some light snow showers, and colder weather. But the bulk of that system is going to likely stay to our north. And then we're going to see a more active pattern along the East Coast, and that leaves the nation's midsection in a fairly quiet weather pattern as we head into the new year. Nothing real big coming our way.
The marketplace, as we left before the holiday weekend, was very concerned about South America, looking forward to a little rainfall in the corn and growing soybean regions of both Argentina and southern Brazil. Apparently, they didn't get as much as many had thought they might. Was that the case?
Yeah, it was. Now, this is especially true for Argentina. Brazil fared a little bit better. But the outlook and those concerns for dryness continue. The forecast for the next week to 10 days looks a lot like it did when we talked last. There's going to be some shower activity, especially over Brazil, but it's not going to be enough to, let's say, tip the scales back to above normal precipitation. Argentina, especially, looks to be the drier of the two growing areas.
How warm will it be?
Well, down south there, it's going to be not terribly hot. We saw temperatures with the drier conditions in Brazil close to normal, but in Argentina, temperatures are going to be averaging a bit above normal.
And then take a look around the rest of the southern hemisphere, talk about any places that might be in trouble or that are having a good growing season at this point.
Well, South Africa, not doing bad right now. The continent of Africa, especially the southern growing areas, their forecast here this next week or so continues to look favorable. That was the case last week. Australia, a little bit drier. But there's still going to be some precipitation, especially in some of the central and western and southwest areas.
And then finally come back to us and talk about how we'll ring in our new year on Saturday evening.
Well, pretty quietly. We are going to be looking at a couple of systems coming from the Pacific Northwest and traveling across the northern tier of the country. But it looks like at least for the start of the new year, if we're going to have any real significant weather, it's likely going to be found in the northern states, especially maybe New England, Pacific Northwest. But we'll ring in the new year on a weather front fairly quietly.
Thank you so much, Don, and we'll talk to you again in 2012.
See you then.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 95 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.